This is Akashvani. In the program Spotlight, now we bring you a discussion on persistent rise in UPI transactions. The participants are Anil Padmanabhan, economic analyst, and Anubha Rohatgi, anchor.
The Unified Payments Interface or UPI-based transactions rose to 20.64 lakh crore rupees in the month of July. According to a National Payments Corporation of India report, UPI transactions surged 35% year-on-year basis. To discuss the significance of this achievement, I'm now joined by economic analyst Anil Padmanabhan. Mr. Padmanabhan, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Anubha.
Mr. Padmanabhan, July is the third consecutive month when UPI transactions topped 20 lakh crore rupees. The volume for July reached 1,444 crores, which is an almost 4% month-on-month increase. How significant are these numbers?
Anubha, these are very significant, most importantly, because they are consistently significant. Ever since UPI was rolled out in 2016, a very low-key launch, we have seen a phenomenal growth in UPI transactions, and it's staggering. Today, it is averaging 14.4 billion transactions in a month, is the latest data that we have. Look back in 2016, the transactions were in thousands. To see this kind of exponential growth is unbelievable, and the fact that it is being sustained year after year, month after month, is most impressive.
Now, as per the latest RBI report on currency and finance, there has been a tenfold rise in UPI volume over the last 4 years, increasing from 12.5 billion in 2019-20 to 131 billion transactions in 2023-24. What are the factors that have led to what you use the word the phenomenal surge?
Nubhat, see, the big surge happened after demonetization was introduced in 2016. That is where we saw the shift from cash to digital in a very big way. Remember that UPI had been launched in March of that year, but it was getting little traction. But post-demonetization was the biggest surge. Thereafter, as innovations started getting loaded on it one after another, as the fintech boom caught traction, and as, you know, proof of concept gained ground, all of this started contributing to the use of UPI. And merchants, consumers, everybody realized the advantages of settling in digital transactions.
Digital payment growth in the country continues to rise, as you just mentioned. And in fact, UPI is now adding up to 60 lakh new users every month. This clearly shows the success of adopting and encouraging digitization in the fintech sector, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And we haven't even scratched the surface. The thing is that UPI is the showpiece of fintech innovation in this country. But beneath the radar, as it were, there are many, many fintech-related innovations underway, some of which got mentioned in this year's budget by the finance minister. She talked about using the account aggregator framework, which is again an innovation built on the India stack, which is what UPI rests on. And the notion of an account aggregator framework, if I may just explain briefly, is basically creating an intermediary which is a fiduciary of an individual's data, and they do the handshake with whoever the lending fintech or bank agency is for the credit side. And the beauty of this is it is non-collateral based lending. An account aggregator framework uses an individual's data, including cash flows, to bypass the notion of collateral-based lending, particularly helpful for the SME sector who don't struggle for cash flows but who struggle for assets. So this is a big step which the government has backed in this year's budget, and hopefully these kind of innovations you will see more and more. The idea of embedded finance is another. So you stack them up gradually. This whole fintech landscape is changing fast and broadening in base.
UPI transactions crossed the 100 billion mark in 2023. The increasing adoption of UPI route for payments is also widening financial inclusion for those who have been so far outside the formal economy.
Oh, absolutely, Anubha. Great point you're making. Undoubtedly. Two, three things tell us this. One, the base of UPI, which you mentioned, is growing so rapidly. Second, look at the transaction value. You mentioned 20.64 lakh crore. Of this, 70 to 80% are for transactions less than 500 rupees. These transactions are obviously being done by the so-called Aam Aadmi, the regular people, and not the well-off. It's not that the richer people are not using UPI. The best part of UPI, it is secular in nature. Every class is using this. So inclusion is built into the very idea of UPI. And I also have to add that the underlying, this UPI is the India stack, underlying which is Aadhaar, with the unique 12-digit identity number that all Indians have. That is what has enabled eKYC and bypassed the traditional expensive KYC norms that were there. Exactly why the Government of India has been able to dole out 50 crore bank accounts in the last 10 years. According to the Bank for International Settlements based in Geneva, this would normally take a country 70 years to achieve. So the answer to financial inclusion is absolutely true, particularly for UPI and to the entire digital structure around UPI, which is being leveraged to accelerate financial inclusion in India.
The government and the NPCI have been actively promoting UPI usage, and to that end, NPCI has launched many innovative features and services such as UPI Lite, Bill Pay Connect. In fact, they've also enhanced transaction limits as well. So what role has such measures played in the rising popularity of UPI payments system?
Anubha, in a very big way, you mentioned UPI Lite, the old strategy of enabling UPI on feature phones. Yes, the smartphones have penetrated India and the post-broadband connectivity has also taken off, but there is a large section of India which is still using feature phones. And many of them are not exactly very literate in the traditional way of, you know, ability to use the keypads. So they have added this audio voice framework to it. So you can talk to your feature phone and engage in a UPI transaction and need not necessarily be on a broadband network. So this has deepened financial inclusion in this country dramatically. So which is why the penetration across India, particularly in rural India, is so good because of this one feature that they've introduced. So yes, NPCI has powered innovation in a big way and they continue with it. And please remember, NPCI is expanding UPI's footprint internationally too.
Yes.
It is now usable in the UAE, Singapore and so on.
And because you're mentioning the international usage, we've seen in the last 1 year or so, whenever we've had foreign dignitaries visiting India, we've seen so many of them, you know, using UPI for the first time, and everybody is all praises for the way India has digitized this whole fintech sector and been, you know, such a pioneer in the use of UPI.
Attraction of UPI is the simplicity and the ease of living that it enables. And how is it able to do this? The framework that India created, which is what the success of UPI is built on, is the entire financial system is interoperable. So it doesn't matter which bank you bank with or which bank I bank with or somebody else banks with, all of them can interact with each other. This is what the foreigners are finding so impressive about. And you're able to do this in a secure manner and to transactions ranging from 10 rupees to whatever amount you name. So this scale is what has impressed them. And if you remember in G20 meet last year in Delhi, the declaration adopted the digital public framework that India has used to launch UPI as a global standard. So India is now taking this experience internationally and all these foreign delegates are actually becoming ambassadors for UPI and India's digital public goods framework.
In fact, India now accounts for 46% of all digital payments in the world and UPI transactions account for 80% of all digital payments in the country. So as you were mentioning, you know, this wouldn't have been possible without the support of a robust infrastructure system to back it up.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's very important for your listeners to understand that how this innovation was managed and then scaled. So first off, the entire foundation of UPI is built on the so-called India stack. India stack is nothing but digital building blocks. And the core digital building block in this is Aadhaar, our unique identity number, which is what enabled us to get an identity which was verifiable digitally. On top of that, you loaded other digital building blocks, in the UPI's case, a payments block, a digital locker, and so on. Now, the beauty of this framework, of this digital public framework, is that they're interoperable. So I can take any of these building blocks, mix and match them, and create new innovations. For example, use the same India stack to create Cowin. Covin, if you recall,
yes,
was the app which enabled 2 billion plus vaccines to be rolled out in India, anywhere, any place, anytime. So you could take your first vaccination shot, say, in a village in Jaunpur, but then you are a migrant labor and you come to Delhi and normally you would have had to stay back in Jaunpur or miss out on your second shot. No, you could easily use the app, register at a center at your time, and take the shot in Delhi. So this was anywhere, any place, was managed by the same digital public goods framework that we talked about. Same way, one nation, one ration card. Again, the context of migrant labor. These two in the past miss out on their rations because they were not physically present in their village or city or wherever they were from originally. No longer today. So the rest of the family can claim their portion of the ration and he or she can claim their ration in wherever city of work that they are in. So one nation, one ration card. This way there are many, many such examples the digital public goods framework has enabled. And now finally, the agri stack, which the government is just rolling out, is built on the similar architecture of the ones we saw UPI, etc., being rolled out, which is looking to target some, I think, 8 crore farmers in this year itself and bring innovation, bring credit and all kinds of other facilities to them. So the DPG framework story of India is just beginning.
The rise in acceptance of the digital payments system, be it UPI or any other system, has also seen several challenges, such as those related to cybersecurity, data privacy and consumer protection. What needs to be done to minimize these risks and educate consumers about them?
Anubha, in a way you answered the question. I think consumers need to be educated first, primarily. We have to incorporate basic cyber hygiene, like changing your password regularly, you know, securing your password, then making sure your phone is not beyond your access, because most people don't realize their entire life is recorded on a phone. So it's very important to secure that hardware with you. And then, of course, the firms and the nationally, cybersecurity has to be scaled up, because this is now a way of life. Cyber risks. You cannot wish it away. So it is here to stay. And I think even last week there was a ransomware attack on a fintech firm which disabled the platform, and now NPCI, I think, restored it yesterday.
Yes, it has.
So this risk from cyber security risks are going to persist. The only way to tackle it is, like you said, educate the consumer, improve our personal hygiene, take it from there and basically cyber secure us. But we have to learn to live with it.
India aims to become world's third largest economy and a developed nation by 2047. How important is digitization of fintech sector in achieving these targets?
The digital economy in general is hugely important. So let's take the example you're suggesting, which is the fintech, and within that the UPI framework. Number of transactions, etc., that we discussed earlier, what do they tell us? There is a shift away from cash to digital framework. This alone leads to a speed of commercial transactions, rather increasing the speed of commercial transactions. And a lot of economists have argued, including the Economic Survey, that a large chunk of the growth momentum that we have seen, this acceleration, is attributable to the digital economy framework that India is embracing rapidly, UPI being one of them. So going forward, it makes eminent sense to accelerate this makeover or transformation to harvest more and more of those gains, or the digital dividends, as it were. So, you know, to give you a simple example, that ASSER, which is the annual status of education report, they had done a survey last year and they found that 87% of rural youth in the age category of 14 to 18 years were enrolled in some education. But more importantly, 90% of them owned smartphones or knew how to use smartphones. So this generation, which is, you know, India is demographically very young at this point, they are digitally savvy, digital natives. So they are going to take more to it than people of my generation. So which means all of them contribute to productivity gains, and this can only help the economy. So yes, it's a very, very important element, and I hope it gains momentum in the coming years.
Mr. Padmanabhan, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thank you, Anubha.
You were listening to a discussion on persistent rise in UPI transactions. The participants were Anil Padmanabhan, economic analyst, and Anubha Rohatgi, anchor. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on EIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on EIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 928-909-4044.